This week on Desert Digest, Phoenix Magazine's dining blog, we've got cocktail legend Kim Hasserud here in the quote-unquote studio. We're going to talk to her about her new concept downtown called the Garden Bar. You're going to enjoy that. We'll also test her knowledge of Arizona food trivia, dining trivia, and get into our tip of the tongue news items this week on Desert Digest. Hello there, and welcome to Desert Digest, the dining blog of Phoenix Magazine. I'm Craig Outier, the editor of the magazine. I'm here with managing editor Leah Lemoine. Hey, Leah.
Hey, Craig.
And also local cocktail legend Kim Hasserud. Hey, Kim.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us today for our only second podcast ever.
I'm honored.
I don't know if you should be honored, but I'm just saying a little forbearance as we, you know, stumble through our poor production and general lack of podcasting expertise. But it should be fun. We're going to talk about, your new cocktail concept in the Valley opening up in the Roosevelt Arts District pretty soon, which is exciting. It'll be the Valley cocktail fans' first chance to kind of engage with you in a direct way in terms of your cocktail genius. That's going to be great. We're also going to get into a little bit of Valley history. I've got a trivia game for you and Leah to play. Should be a lot of fun. And then we also have a little a roundup of news and notes called Tip of the Tongue. So without further ado, let's jump into Desert Digest. All right. Always news going on. I guess, you know, our restaurant industry is big enough that it's producing great, interesting, engaging news every week. So the thing that we've been noticing are a lot of ghost kitchens. Have you heard of these, Kim?
I have noticed a lot of ghost kitchens. You know, it's interesting because we're with the concept we're opening up. You know, we wanted to kind of get a head start and do some to-go cocktails.
Right.
So we were looking for a ghost kitchen to like batch, but we ended up using a friend of mine owns a Breadfruit. We're using their kitchen.
Oh, but, Danielle Leone is your friend?
Yeah.
Dwayne?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well. Actually, there's a news item that kind of pertains to go to cocktails. But as far as ghost kitchen goes, you know, people don't know it. There are these, kitchens without a dining room where multiple chefs, multiple companies can create to-go food and then use Uber Eats and other mobile, you know, dining fulfillment companies to deliver it to at your home. The thing that's interesting is we have brick and mortar restaurants that people recognize, restaurant chains, restaurant groups, developing their own ghost kitchen concepts. Pita Jungle, everyone's heard of Pita Jungle, has a new Mexican concept called Asa Salud opening, which is it's healthy Mexican food, kind of the Mexican food version of the Mediterranean food you normally find at Pita Jungle. And that just opened. There's a great coffee shop, wine bar concept in the West Valley called Ground Control. A lot of people have heard of that. They have a ghost kitchen concept called Major Tom opening. If you get that, you know, Ground Control to Major Tom from the David Bowie song. Yeah, very clever. I mean, I want to order something from Major Tom, which includes, I think they've got like, you know, like Nashville hot chicken, obviously coffee, things like that. Just so clever. I feel like they need patronization just based on that name alone. Yeah. So that's opening as well. Leah, think of any others that have... restaurant groups that have started ghost kitchens.
I got to try the media preview for Nobana, which is the ghost kitchen coming out of Wildflower. You know, if you're growing up in the Valley, everybody loves Wildflower for getting loaves of bread or a quick soup and a sandwich and a salad. And so this is like kind of pan Asian. So I got to try, they had pho, they had a spicy miso broth. And my favorite was the red curry bowl.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Not things you'd normally expect to get at Wildflower.
No, exactly. So nice variety for people
who
come from there a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'd rather see restaurants try something new with this ghost kitchen trend than the same old, same old. The other one that comes to mind is Flyby from Fox Concepts, Fox Restaurant Concepts, which is Detroit style pizza. They do that out of their yard location on 7th Street in North Central Phoenix. And, you know, Detroit style pizzas that baked in an auto pan. So it's kind of spongy and vertical. Right. And it's very good. Actually had it a couple times. Great wings too. Yeah, so lots of ghost kitchens, you know, keep your eye out for that. We have a blog up on our dining site at phoenixmag.com. It kind of does a roundup. Other news, the Magior Group, everybody's familiar with them. The patriarch, Tommaso, passed away last month, I believe. And they also do the Italian Butcher, or Sicilian Butcher, rather. That's the meatball restaurant. And they've had a bunch of different concepts. So they have a new one coming out now called the Italian Daughter, Cucina and Cocktail. This is at their North Scottsdale location on, like, in the Pinnacle Peak area, I think, mm-hmm. which previously had been...
Tommaso's When in Rome.
That's it, When in Rome, and also mm-hmm. Tommaso Italian Kitchen. Right. They've tried a few different concepts there. Nothing's quite stuck. This one's going to be a, you know, a cocktail bar, also a piano bar, I understand, but not a dueling piano bar, thank goodness. It's a very important distinction. I want everyone to understand. One of those is awesome. One of them is almost insufferable. I think they're doing the former. So that's opening soon because, you know, they've already got the brick and mortar part of that going. So look out for the Italian Daughter, Cucina and Cocktail. And then lastly, lawmakers this week in the Arizona House of Representatives passed House Bill 2773, which allows restaurants to sell alcohol to go. Now, it's different than bars selling alcohol to go, which they have been allowed to do. But the controversy here is that, well, restaurants, their liquor license only costs like $5,000 or something. You know, the implication being they're going to sell more food or almost as much food as alcohol, so they get a cheaper liquor license, whereas bars have a class six license and they pay like $100,000 for their liquor license. So obviously bars are not thrilled with this because they paid that much for the liquor license. And that's part of their embedded, you know, value of their business. So that's going to the Senate and is kind of controversial a little bit. What do you think of that, Kim? Do you have a take?
You know, I'm really torn. I'm torn because, you know, we have a Series 6 and it costs a lot of money to get, you know, and you had to take out loans and there's, you know, that needs to maintain value. So I understand it, but I also understand we're in a situation restaurants need to survive.
Right.
And if that means they need to sell to go alcohol, I don't want to see them fail. You know, and I think it's an important part of our community that, you know, I feel like there needs to be some kind of retribution. I'm not sure what, but I am really empathetic to both sides of it.
Right. Aren't we all? You know, it's just no easy answer.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know, it's a temporary thing. And I think that's probably all they want, you know, until we ride this thing out.
Yeah.
But we'll see where that goes. I think the Senate has to vote on it as well. And, you know, all things being equal, I'd rather have a drink in a bar than take it home. I think we all would. So, you know, ultimately, this hopefully isn't anything that causes a division between the two communities in Arizona. Openings and closings this week, Ezekiel's and Ahwatukee, which is a soul food restaurant, unfortunately closed. I hate seeing that. You know, it's impossible. The pandemic didn't play a role in restaurants closing these days. Nori Sushi and Desert Ridge also closed, and not a great week for ice cream places. Feezer's Ice House in Tempe and the Creamistry in the Uptown Plaza area of Camelback also closed. So not a red letter month for ice cream. And then opening, though, some great restaurants. Bacanora from former Ghost Ranch chef Rene Andrade. Ghost Ranch was the restaurant he opened out there in Tempe about a year ago, year or two ago. He's landed at the old Barrio. Which Barrio was it, Leah? Do you remember?
Yeah,
it was Grand.
Barrio Cafe Grand Reserva, which is in the Bragg's Pie Factory space, which is kind of that pie wedge shaped building on Grand Avenue.
Very interesting novel shape. Yeah. So he's there and he just opened this last weekend. Our dining critic, Nikki Buchanan, went and checked it out. Mm-hmm. Also, Il Bosco, which is a artisan pizza joint in North Central Phoenix, opened a row location, probably not far from where you're going to be, Kim.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Yes. Always good to see restaurants down there.
Yeah.
And then Connie's Barbecue out in Buckeye, another barbecue place in the West Valley. West Valley's become sort of the ground zero for quality barbecue, aside from Little Miss Barbecue, of course, but it's always good to see new barbecue places pop up. Also, Ofrenda, a South American, Mexican, Pan-Latin concept opening in Cave Creek. So if you have a moment, you can check out one of those new restaurants all opening. Now, and I'll give you the sound effect, which I should have been using the whole time. I thought I'd do a little trivia. All these restaurants got me thinking about how long different restaurants have been opened and closed. And I thought, let's test local restaurant knowledge of Leah and Kim. Keep score. I'm going to kind of throw just random questions at you guys, and then we'll see who's the most knowledgeable. I'll start with you, Kim. Macayo's and Bill Johnson's, both well-known local restaurant brands. Macayo's, the family Mexican restaurant chain. Bill Johnson's, Big Apple, which is the barbecue chain. Okay. Which do you think was older? Which was started first?
I'm going to say Bill Johnson's.
Bill Johnson's 1956, Macayo's 1946.
Wow.
Strange, right? Macayo's been around forever.
Yeah, I did not know it has been around that long. Wow.
Me neither. I was surprised. I was thinking 70s.
Yeah.
What have you. All right, I'm going to throw this over to you, Leah.
Okay.
These two, I'm sure you know, you're familiar with these two restaurant groups, Tomaso's, we just talked about him and them, and Chompy's, which is older?
Oh, Lord, I should know this because we just had them in our big feature about dining clans in the Valley.
That's right. Both of them were in that. You're not paying attention at work, Leah.
No, I'm bad with numbers. I'm a words girl. I think that they're both started in the 70s. And I'm going to say Tomaso was first. That's just my hunch.
You were right by 2 years.
Oh, good.
Tomaso, 1977. Chompy's, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Impressive run for both of those groups. Jeez Louise.
I love both of those families.
Totally. All right. I'm going to throw back to you, Kim.
All right.
Four Peaks or Pita Jungle. Both ridiculously successful local food, hospitality, beverage groups. I'll give you this. Both started in the 90s, but which is older?
I'm going to say Pita Jungle.
You're right. By 2 years. Pita Jungle, 94. Four Peaks, 96. Yeah. And I wish I could buy stock in both of those.
Right?
Totally. All right. You're one for one. Excellent. Leah, this is for you. Who was the first Arizona chef to win a James Beard Award? Now, I'll throw you the two options here. Christopher Gross or Vincent Garitho. Vincent's on Camelback. Christopher Gross, of course, we interviewed him last week.
When you first asked me, Vincent was the one that came up in my head, so I'm going to trust my gut and say Vincent.
You're right. Vincent was the first. Vincent McGarrethro, first Arizona chef to win a James Beard. And Kim, you have a James Beard.
So I've been honored by the James Beard organization. They did a Women in Food thing about 10, 11 years ago. And this is the first time they'd ever acknowledged like female mixologists. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm glad it was you. And high time. And yeah, Arizona, we don't have a really rich, super rich James Beard history, but what we do have, we're very proud of. And Vince McGarrow, first one. So Leah, you're two for two. All right, I'm gonna throw another one to you, Kim. Two restaurant groups people are pretty familiar with. Genuine Hospitality, i.e. the Vig guys.
Yep.
And then Prime Steaks Concepts, i.e. the Mastro Steak guys.
Okay.
Which is older?
I'm gonna say Genuine.
You are right. You know why? Because Mastro's has been around forever, but they sold it. Then they went away for a while because they had a non-compete, in their contract. Came back in 2011 and started, what was the place over where we used to work, Leah?
Dominic's.
Lincoln's?
Dominic's, yeah. With the good meatballs.
Dominic's, exactly. Super, super ritzy steak place. Actually, that was their first place. And they did Steak 44, which is the more successful of the two later on. The Genuine Hospitality started in 2006 with that Arcadia location. So you're right, Kim. And that makes you 2-1. Leah hasn't missed yet. Okay, I'm going to give you, this one's hard, Leah.
Okay, great.
These are two rather new restaurants. Uh-huh. People love them. Want to know which one is older? Clever Koi. Started in kind of Midtown Phoenix, Pan-Asian place. Love those guys. Or Virtue, Honest Craft, the wildly successful Scottsdale Italian restaurant from Gio Osso. Mm-hmm. Which one is older?
I think Clever Koi opened around the time I started working at the magazine. And I think Virtue was open before then. So I think Virtue is older.
You're right, but only by 5 months. They both opened in 2013.
Wow.
All right. Okay. All right, well, then I have an open-ended question for each of you. Kim, this is a good one with your James Beard background. Name the only Arizona restaurant with two Beard nominees slash winners currently working in the same kitchen right now. Only one.
Wait, say the question one more time.
The only Arizona restaurant with two James Beard nominees or winners slash winners, you know, they either won or were nominated, currently working in the same kitchen right now in various chef roles.
Wow.
Good cocktail program too.
I have no idea.
This is kind of a hard one because one of the chefs just started working there.
It's not the character. No.
With Peter Kaspersky.
Yeah.
No, not okay. Not quite. They have an impressive roster over there as well.
That's a good guess.
That's a good guess.
Is it like a savory chef and a pastry chef? I'm doing air quotes for the podcast.
Yeah, right. Actually, no, it's an executive chef and a chef de cuisine.
Okay.
Or I'm gonna say it. It's Elements with Bo McMillan, and then he just hired Samantha Sands, who got her nomination over there at the Four Seasons, where she was working for a while.
Oh.
So yeah, and they're now in the same kitchen. So
I didn't know. Okay.
Embarrassment of riches over there. Yeah. And then Lee, how about this one? This once celebrated Scottsdale restaurant now only exists at Sky Harbor. Because the Scottsdale location. Yes, you're right. You leaped over Leah, but this is all going to hell, so it's fine.
No,
it's funny you just said that, Kim, because you guessed Peter Kaspersky earlier. And of course, he's the owner of Cowboy Chow, so kind of came together better than I ever could have imagined when I spent a half hour on the internet putting this silly thing together. So thank you. I think you tied. I think that was a tie.
Definitely.
Spiritually or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kim, let's get into your new concept and kind of your history. I'm just going to ask you straight out, what was the first cocktail you ever mixed?
Oh my God. I am completely going to date myself, but the first cocktail I ever made was a funky cold Medina.
Oh, nice. Now, was that during the Beastie Boys era? Is that why you did it?
Yeah, it was purple. It was, yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
I hear those are illegal in some states.
I think it probably is. But, you know, but at that time, you know, it was kind of funny because at that time, I think that's when we started to see like a lot more fun behind the bar. Like, you know, even though the drinks were kind of gimmicky, but they had lots of colors, you know, way too much sugar. There were toys, you know, in the cocktails. But that's when we started to see like some more fun kind of happening behind the
bar. And that was in the 80s?
That was in the 90s. That was in the early, that was like the mid 90s.
Right. And what isn't a funky comedina? Can I ask you that?
You know, I know it had blue curacao and grenadine in it because it was purple. That was like, that was like early 90s. But then like, you know, you had like the blue whales, but it's kind of funny because now you're starting to see some of those like 80s and early 90s drinks like
come back,
but redone in a crafty way.
Like a Sex on the Beach?
Yeah, but done in a really fun way.
I think I predicted this, didn't I, Leah? Didn't I say we got to do like an 80s craft thing? Because it seemed like that was, because for a while, and this is right when you were starting to come up, and what kind of propelled people's love for cocktails were the classic cocktails were coming back, right? Mm-hmm. The Manhattan and that kind of thing. I mean, then you just got to like just follow the timeline. Eventually, the 80s are going to come back into style sometime. So that is fun. Now, you started your career in New York City.
Yes.
Where were the bars you worked at there?
So I worked, I the first like big bartending gig I got was actually at a Houlihan's in Times Square.
Nice.
Where, but that was crazy. I mean, you're talking like 10
volume,
volume. But I would say the first restaurant group I worked for was called the Fireman's Group, where we really got to, they really put forth, you know, fresh ingredients. And that was where, you know, the chef, like, let me go back in the walk-in and raid the walk-in and, you know, kind of create things. And that was in the late 90s. That's kind of where I, at the time, I also met people like Tony Abuganim and Dale DeGroff, who were big kind of mentors in our industry. And that's kind of really where my love of the craft started.
And that's what excited so many, the imaginations of so many craft cocktail mavens like yourself, is bringing in those culinary traditions. Did you have a culinary background like so many mixologists do these days, or?
You know, I didn't, but I was really influenced by a lot of the chefs. But you know, what's interesting is that, you know, anytime I do bartender training, I always say that we're moving forward by taking a step back. Because if you go back in history in like the late 1800s, the mid 1800s to the early 1900s is what we call the golden age of the cocktail, where cocktails and bartenders were put on a pedestal. I mean, it was a 3-year, mentorship just to get behind the bar.
It's like going on a medical residency or something.
Yeah. I mean, they were, and the amount of money that they made, they were up there with like lawyers and doctors, you know? I mean, it was a really established profession. And then Prohibition hit, and then it's just taken us that long
to recover
from Prohibition. Yeah.
Now, after making a name for yourself in the New York cocktail scene, you broke off and kind of went viral and scaled up, I guess you could say. You started a consulting company, Liquid Architecture, went around the country, the world, creating cocktail menus for some of the biggest restaurants, P.F. Chang's, Cheesecake Factory, Four Seasons. You worked with a lot of them. Wrote a cookbook. I mean, you know, became kind of a cocktail celebrity, I suppose you could say. Did getting back in front of customers, was that something you always kind of wanted to do, like, you know, with a bar that you managed on a day-to-day basis? Is that why you came back to Phoenix?
Yes. I mean, I love teaching. I love training. I love teaching and mentoring other bartenders. And I've really wanted to kind of get back to, because I travel quite a bit with Liquid Architecture, my consultancy. And while I love that, I've always kind of wanted to, like, okay, let's, you know, stake my claim here in Phoenix and really do something for the community. And that's one of the reasons, like, I'm opening this garden bar concept as a way to really marry gardening and cocktails and fresh ingredients, but really be approachable. And that's kind of, I would say, my niche is to do craft cocktails, but not have it go over someone's head. Make it really approachable so everyone can understand it. So the other piece to this is this nonprofit piece called the Cocktail Collaborative. And we're going to have a whole educational series that's open to enthusiasts, open to trade, and it'll be a really inclusive space to learn anything and everything about the spirits in the cocktail world.
Right. And this is downtown in the Roosevelt Arts District, Row, we like to call it. And when will it be open?
So we're looking at May. We're nearing the end of construction, looking to open our doors in May and kind of start some educational programming probably by June.
Awesome. And so it'll be sort of half bar, half classroom or graduate school for cocktailing, if you want to call it that, and half garden, if we can throw another 50% in there.
Yeah, there will definitely be some gardening aspects, and I'm going to be working with some local growers to like grow wildflowers and things like that we can incorporate into the program. But it is a house. It's like a 1914 house. But so when you go there, it'll feel kind of like you're in someone's house. There'll be a bar there, but there's like, you know, different bedrooms and different rooms that we can space out and do things in. But I'm really looking forward to welcoming, opening our doors and to welcoming people there for sure.
Absolutely. Exciting. Give me an example of maybe what would be your flagship cocktail there. Like, you know, excite the listeners with some details about what might go into a cocktail they'll find there on, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Well, a couple things. One is I am a huge honey fanatic.
Right on.
I've always used honey, but I really explored all the different varietals and how you can manipulate flavor with that. So I see incorporating a lot of different honey. And when you think of honey, you think of it, oh, as a sweetener, right? Or as a flavor, but you can use honey to enhance other elements in the cocktail. So if I want
to use it, consistency of the cocktails is thicker with honey.
Yeah. Well,
aromatics.
Yeah. Very aromatic, but also, you know, bees play such an important part of our agriculture that, so I'll be talking about a lot about that, but also using a lot of different varietals and even forms of honey. So, you know, bee pollen and, you know, whipped honey and honeycomb infusions, things like that too. Yeah.
Sounds awesome. So, you know, a bee's knees is a famous cocktail. It's gin, right? Gin, lemon juice, and honey. Is that essentially it? You're going to take that to a awesome level.
Absolutely. In fact, I want to have a bee's knees section where you can choose your own spirit, and then we'll make a recommendation of a honey varietal that goes best with that.
Oh, hell yeah. Fine. I've seen people take a mule, like the mules, and create a mule menu where it's 12 different mules. You're going to do that with bee's knees. I think that's wonderful. Can't wait to visit. Why don't we end this on a fun note? Not that this whole thing hasn't been awesomely fun. I'm going to give you a desert island question. So 5 items, you're on a desert island. You have all the mixing implements you need, you know, a tumbler, shaker, all that, all the ice and water you want. What 5 cocktail items do you bring besides that? Liquids. And it could be, it can only, and you have to include your citrus and any sweetener. Say we'll give you simple syrup too on the side. I don't want to waste one of your 5 choices on simple. Okay. I imagine, you know, I'll leave it that at that. 5 liquids and or whatever else.
Okay. Are we both answering this question?
No, just you.
No, just me. Okay.
Leah does a good cocktail, but you know.
Yeah. So I've got my, you said I already have citrus, right?
Right. No, you have to pick a citrus too.
Pick a citrus. Okay.
Yeah.
I would probably pick lemon juice.
Okay. More than lime juice. But you love the bee's knees. So you got to go with lemon juice.
Yeah. I got to go with lemon juice. I think lemon juice plays, probably a little bit better. It's more diverse, let's say. Right. I would pick lemon juice. I would pick, I'd probably pick an herb like mint, because then I can continue to grow that maybe on the island and get more.
Sure. Well, that's thinking.
I would pick, a base spirit, like maybe a vodka, because I could maybe try to make some botanicals with that, like make my own gin.
Make your own gin. That's smart.
Yeah. So
That's three.
Okay.
You've got vodka. You've got lemon juice.
Yeah.
And what was the third one you did?
Mint.
Mint. There you are.
Mm-hmm. Yep, mint. I've got all my tools. I would have maybe pomegranate. For a few reasons. Pomegranate, because I could make a grenadine out of that. I could make a syrup. I could also do juice out of that kind of tastes like cranberry. So I could do a few different things with pomegranate too. It's also really hearty and would last longer.
Right. You get a little tannin in the thing too. It's good for you. I mean, you know, the heart.
Yeah. One
more. Is it a spirit or is it an aperitif? Is it a Amaro?
That's what I'm thinking. I was torn between getting like bringing an Angostura or maybe, you know what? I might go with Campari.
Ooh, yeah. I like the way that ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. I hope you can, and I hope you're successful with your gin experiment. The gin and Campari, you know.
Yeah.
Kim, one more time. When are we expecting Garden Bar to open?
To open in May, and then May. The educational stuff with the Cocktail Collaborative to start in June.
Awesome. And that's just in time. I mean, May's still beautiful here.
Yeah.
Is there a patio? I mean, you said it's a house, so a lot of indoor space.
There'll be a lot of indoor space, but we'll have some outdoor seating in the back.
Cool. And what part of Row is it in?
It's on 6th Avenue, just south of Roosevelt.
Oh, cool. So kind of near the VIG.
Really? Yeah, right around the corner from the VIG.
Awesome.
And what I like about it, too, is that it feels like a neighborhood. I mean, it feels like you literally are going to someone's house in a neighborhood. It's pretty I'm pretty excited.
I think Gracie's Tax Bar is not too far from
there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's right there, too. Yep.
I'm imagining a crawl in my head right now that involves you three. So, Kim, thank you very much. Kim Hasserud of Liquid Architecture and the Garden Bar opening this summer, this fall, spring, rather. I'll get the season eventually. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leah. Thanks for coming. And we'll see you next week here on Desert Digest. Thank you.